Love is unconditional. Liking is conditional. Love is unconditional. Liking is conditional. Any kind of love is unconditional. And anything that's conditional is not love. So, if you think you're loving and you love your brother better than you love your sister, then that's conditional love, and that's not love, that's liking. I like my brother better than my sister better than my brother. I like my husband better than your husband, you know, my wife better than your wife. Those are conditional things. Yes, John? Yeah. Now, John says, who would ever make a statement like that? Lots of people. Lots of people. Think of the children in school. Why can't you get good grades like your brother did? Your brother was a straight A student. But why don't you be like your sister? Your sister is always helpful around the house, always considerate. She's always doing little things to make everybody happy. Why don't you be like that, you know? Be like that. Be like that. And of course, that's the fastest way to chase a kid away from being like that, is to tell him to be like that. But that's liking. And that's not liking, that's unliking. So, unconditional love accepts everything just the way it is. Doesn't say that something should be changed to make it better. Something should be improved. It doesn't say that something needs to be upgraded or something. It just accepts everything just the way it is. That's beautiful. Now, can you do that? Can you be unconditional? And the answer is no. No one has the capacity to be loving unconditional. Because that's just it. Because. there's always a because. I love you because your eyes are like roses and your teeth are like, you know, stones or whatever, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah, it's kind of silly. But that's what we do, don't we? We make conditions. And every love song, listen to it, every love song has a condition in it. I love you because you're beautiful. I love you because you're the last woman on earth. I love you because you're wonderful. And, you know, that's really not, that's not unconditional love. That's a very much conditioned thing. So, I think Anita came close to unconditional love today as she was talking to her little snake. And the snake has grown, you know, doubled its length since she met it last year. And it's a little garden snake, a little garter snake, and they're not harmful. They're just bug eaters. And they're lots of fun to play with and watch. Children oftentimes catch these snakes and carry them around in their pocket and bring them out to and give the girls a thrill. Or their teacher, or their parents, or their mother. When they reach in the pocket to pull out the kid's stuff before they throw it in the wash, ah, snake! And he was very comfortable in the pocket. And he said, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? I'm just a snake. I didn't know any better. But mother is very conditional about her love for snakes. In the first place, her love for surprises. That makes her very, very startled. But when we are totally loving, we're never surprised. Anita came down to the well house, and there was this snake laying across her path. And she says, can I cross the path? And the snake looked up at her and said, anytime, babe, you got your permission, you know. And so Anita just walked over him, and then he looked at Anita and he says, boy, oh boy, are you a classy lady. You know, I wish we had classy snakes like you, you know. And so then Anita was working in the pump house, and the snake was still there. And so she put her hand back and she petted the snake. And the snake said, oh, you made my day, baby, you know. But that was unconditional love on Anita's part, you know. Totally not expecting anything but happiness from that snake. And the snake just gave her happiness. And I have to interpret what the snake said because Anita didn't really understand what the snake was saying. But now you do, you know. You're a pretty cool snake, right? Okay, well, you watch those guys, you know. They oftentimes want to start bringing you presents and stuff, you know. You have to be careful. You can accept them. Just say, no strings, I'll take your presents, no strings. Oh, there's no strings. You know, they always say that. You know, there's no strings. But do you go out with me? Can't you see yourself going to the theater with a snake? Mm-hmm. You go in the door, maybe a boa constrictor, you know, wrapped around your neck. And you go into the theater and sitting next to you, in back of you and in front of you, would get quite a thrill. But unconditional love allows you to do all these things. And if you truly had unconditional love, not just being a show-off with a snake around your neck, you know, but having unconditional love for that snake, you know, you just, oh, you're so sweet. You know, let's go to a romance movie. And the snake would say, oh, yes, let's go. You know, but you love him. No, you're not going to get married to the snake. You're going to have sex with the snake or something like that. But you love him. You love him as much as you love any boyfriend you ever had. And it's a great experience. But that's unconditional love. Because if you start putting any condition on that, he's going to leave you. He's going to say, I don't have a relationship with a person who has conditions on their relationship. Snakes are very, very funny that way. They like to be independent. They like to be the only one. They like to be number one. In fact, they were number one from the beginning of the Bible, weren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, they were around passing out apples when God thought it wasn't too cool. But did you notice the snake never ate one of the apples? So the snake is always in his unaware self. That's a beautiful way to be. But can you be unconditionally loving? You never thought we'd go on snakes for unconditionally loving, but can you be unconditionally loving? Now, can you see a rattlesnake going across your path? And can you say, excuse me, and step over him?
Yes.
You can.
We did.
It takes a little bit of untraining of thoughts you've had before, mm-hmm. which said rattlesnakes are bad. And you say, hey, you know, you're a great guy. And he says, oh, yes, yes, I love you. And you know he's not striking at you. He's just reaching out to touch you. He just wants to reach out and say, I love you. But if you think he's reaching out to strike you, then you pull back, and he accepts that pulling back is fear, and so then he bites you. But if you just sit there and let him come, I have walked through, yes, Ellen, I have walked through so many beehives. And I was naked as I walked through the beehives. And the bees were just swarming all over the place. And I was just naive in my consciousness to think that any snake would want to bite me. Any bee. And so I walked right through the beehives. And then I went to this person's house. And I said, at this one time, and I said, gee, those are great bees you got out there. He said, you came through those bees dressed like that? And I said, yeah. He said, you're amazing. I said, no, the bees are amazing. If you love them, they let you alone. If you don't love them, then they want to take advantage of you. Or if you bother them in any way, if you have tight clothing and they get into your path, you know, and they're squashed, then they'll bite to get out. Mm-hmm. But they're merely trying to be themselves and being loving and being wonderful. Now, can you be that way? Can you be unconditionally loving? He said, I don't know. He said, I got to wear my helmet and stuff when I go into the beehive, my net and what have you. I said, you know, I don't know how intelligent you are, but if a bee wanted to get under your net, it is so easy, because I can see when you put the net on, you have a big gape in the back here. And every time you put your head forward, the gape opens up. And if the bees were interested in coming in and saying hi to you, they could fly right in there. And then you would really be upset. Bees in my face, bees, what's good there? Yeah, be cool. Take off your hat gently and say, out, guys, out, you know, that's my house, you know, and then put it back on and be comfortable. But you see, to be unconditionally loving, everything loves you, and everything smiles with you, and everything goes along with you, whether it's rattlesnakes or bees or people. And if you were unconditionally loving with your sister, who got the good grades in school, she would have told you how she did it. Now, what would she tell you how she did it in two words?
I know that I know that I know.
That's much more than two words.
Yeah.
Love it. If you love your course, it's easy. Just love your course, because then you're interested in it and you get good grades for it. So, love is unconditional. Liking is conditional. Remember those things the next time you see a snake. I love you. A sincere compliment is always well received. How many times have you given a sincere compliment to anybody? Have you said to somebody that you love them? And then you turn around to the next person, I love you. And, oh, I love you so. And you said to a whole group of people that you love them. Could you do that? Could you say to a number of people that you love them and make it sound sincere? Well, you can, if it is sincere. If it is a sincere compliment, you don't have to worry about it. Does, well, for instance, our little girl in the show there, Shirley Temple, did she say to her sister, I love you? Did she say to this man, I love you? Did she say to the butler, I love you? Now, was each I love you sort of unique? Each I love you was very special, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Was each I love you sincerely done? Okay. You see, we can give compliments. We can give sincere compliments, and they will be well received. But did he should he also say to the audience, I love you for applauding for my show and so forth. I love you for appreciating me. Was she an actress? Yes. Was she an actor? Did she like to get out and act? Yes. Did she like to have applause? Yes. Did she like to have attention? Yes. Did she get attention? Yes. Was she a capable girl, you know? Did she have lots of talent? Yes. So she could have all these things, couldn't she? Yeah. Yeah. She could have all these things. And she could have a good time. Because in having a good time, she was being herself and having fun. Now, when you give a compliment, and you give a sincere compliment, it's quite lovely. It's always well received. But when you give an insincere compliment, it's not well received, you know. Oh, Sylvia, you always do everything right. Oh, John, you always do this right. You always do that right. Well, now, Sylvia always does it right. But John doesn't always do it right. John is a klutz. Sometimes he does it right, sometimes he doesn't do it right. And so when I say to Sylvia, you always do it right, she knows that that means her. But when I say to John, you always do it right, John says, uh-oh, I wonder what he wants. You know, I don't always do it right. He tells me how often I don't do it right, and he tells me that I am a jerk, you know, that I'm a dolt, that I have no talent. And now he's complimenting me. I wonder what he wants, you know. See, now that's an insincere compliment, isn't it? It's one that is not appreciated. It's not well received. We have to be very careful with how we speak and share ideas with others, because so often we can come across, you know, insincere when we perhaps are as sincere as we can be. Now, when you see a little boy doing some act, and it's a gracious act in his mind, and in your mind, you know, he comes in like a mess, like the little puppy dogs. They see you, and they come running across the field to you. They're muddy, they're dirty, they're sloppy. They are just so filled with love. They want to say, hi, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're home. It's a sincere compliment. But with all the muddy feet, you know, it's hard to take. But you have to just accept it. You have to just accept it with all well-meaning, because they mean it so well. They mean it so from their heart. The dogs have no way of judging not to mean it that way. And it's a wonderful thing, right?
Right.
Right. And you can't get mad at them for jumping up on your clothes or their muddy feet, because they mean it with their whole heart. So a sincere compliment, however interestingly it's given to us, is always well accepted. It may not be fully understood, you know, that my dirty shit, my gosh. What am I going to do now? Well, you're going to wear them. People say to you, well, you got paw prints on your pants. Yeah, that's my puppies. They just had to come and tell me how much they loved me when I got into the house. So you're wearing the dirty paw print pants all day long. And everybody who mentions it, you say, yeah, that's my puppies. They love me so much whenever they come. Yeah, that's my puppies. Oh, somebody loves you? Somebody really loves you? You betcha, my puppies do. All the rest of the world can ignore me, but my puppies don't. They know a good man when they see one. They know a good woman when they see one. You see, a sincere compliment comes across in a beautiful way. Are dogs complimenting you by saying, hey, you know, are they complimenting you? Oh boy, are they complimenting you. When you go out in the garage and the cats jump down off of their perch and they rub against you with their fur that's falling all out, it gets all over your beautiful serge blue trousers, and yuck, you know. And what are you going to say? Cats get lost. Are you going to go in and get your cat remover, fur remover thing, and take it off? It's just part of the game. It's a sincere compliment, one that you really would not like to do without. But there are times when you wish it wouldn't happen, but it does. Now, when you're dealing with children, and you say to the children something lovely, and you don't mean it, they know it right from the word go. They don't have to be sophisticated, they don't have to be intelligent, they don't have to be bright or anything, but they know. Even the little boy who has not all his marbles, and you say something to him, he knows when you mean it and when you don't. And maybe he's smart enough to say, well, thank you, I'm glad you noticed that, thank you so much. You know, like he's really happy that you said it, and that way instead of putting it back on you. But he knows, they know, everyone knows. The dogs and cats know when you mean it too. Yeah. You pat them, and they know that that's not a sincere pat. Every compliment that's given is understood exactly for how it's given. And when you give it with love, a sincere compliment, it reaches out and gathers in all of the wonderful facets that you'd like to have it do. Now, when President Nixon went to Russia and he met with Khrushchev, and they each kissed each other on the side of the face like this here, for President Nixon that was totally out of the mannerisms that he's familiar with. But he did it. When he went to China, and his host bowed to him, he bowed to them. And that's totally out of his character. He doesn't bow to anybody, especially Nixon. He didn't bow to anybody. He was a strong, positive, dynamic man. But that was a compliment. That was a compliment. And they gave the compliment, and he meant the compliment. Nixon meant the bow that he returned. And he meant the bow that was received to him was received as a loving and a wonderful thing. But this is all part of the game of compliments. We have to know how to handle them. We have to know how to give them. We have to know how to receive them. And we have to know what's important. Now, can you create people giving you a compliment all the time? And why do you think you go to the hairdresser? Because you want a compliment. You don't make your hair pretty for yourself, or do you? Do you make your hair pretty for yourself, and you don't care if anyone notices it or not? Although you do say like this when you come up to people. Notice my new hairdo. But that's part of the game of life too. But normally, if we're reasonable, good human beings, we dress for ourselves. We don't dress for others. But if we go out in society, if we go away from the home, if we go away from wherever we are, then we dress for others. And then we expect to have a compliment. And sometimes we get them. And I think it's most interesting how that works out. So think about this. Think about this. A sincere compliment is always well received. Are you willing to give a sincere compliment? Always? And have it well received? Do you know how to give a sincere compliment? Yeah. Do you know how to give a sincere compliment? Yeah. Do you know how to give a sincere compliment? Do you always give sincere compliments? Good. Then, so it is. I love you. The body has a miraculous capacity to heal itself. We don't often take that into consideration, but the body has a miraculous capacity to heal itself. When you consider how people damage their bodies, how people drink alcohol and mess up their liver and, you know, destroy the inner workings of their body. The liver is a very important organ in the body. And then when they stop drinking, it goes in a period of time. Every month the body is purer and purer. Every month the liver is cleaner and cleaner, until finally the liver is back to normal, which seems unreasonable. If people smoke, and they smoke forever, you know, they're 50 years old, 60 years old, they've been smoking all their life, and stop. It takes at least, what do they say, 2.5 months for your lungs to be clear. 2.5 months after smoking all your life for your lungs to be clear. Now that is amazing. I would not have thought that could be the case, because you get all that tar in your lungs, you get all that other stuff there, but the body has the resiliency to throw it off, to dump it out, to clean it up. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody hits you, pow, right in the face, and you get a big black eye, and the body's resiliency just naturally heals it up. If you put a beef steak over it, it heals a little faster, they say. But it heals it up beautifully. Now, you look at a dog who is injured very badly will crawl into some dark space and just lay there and relax, turn off the pain, and let the healing take place. Now, this is just amazing. This is something that's been going on for decades, because decades, for millennia, back as far as man has existed. Because in the early days, man didn't have a doctor to go around taking care of him. He didn't have pills to take away the pain. He didn't have anything to alleviate the problem. He just had to mentally stop and take stock of himself and say, I'm home perfect. I'm okay. Which is what he did do. And he came through things beautifully. He died a lot of times too. But basically he came through. Otherwise we wouldn't have the human race, you know. Because there's a lot of terrible stuff going on in the primitive world with animals, you know, that and look at the stuff that they would eat. They would eat the meat of animals that they had killed 3 or 4 days, maybe a week or so earlier, and in the summertime, and the meat would be rancid. And still they would eat it and survive. They must have developed a tremendous capacity to handle that sort of thing, just like the Mexicans do. Mexicans use a great deal of spice on their food because this kills the germs and the bacteria that have built up on it when they didn't have refrigerators. Now, you go into Mexico and you go into their third world area parts of Mexico, they don't have refrigerators. They don't have anything like that. They don't even have cool boxes. They don't dig a hole in the ground like they do up in the northern parts of the country and use that as a cool box. They just make their carne asada. And what's carne asada? It's strips of beef that they've hung over the fire and they smoked and sort of cooked. And it's like the beef jerky type thing that we eat. And that is just meat that's held. And what did the early pioneers do? They liked pigs because they could pickle them and they could keep them in salt brine and keep them not fresh, but they could keep them available to eat so that they wouldn't get trichinosis and other things. But the body has the amazing capacity to recoup itself. And if parents weren't so wonderful, if they weren't forcing this cold medicine down their kids' mouths because they wanted to make somebody feel good that sells the cold medicine, the kids would probably get well faster. But the doctors will tell you, there's nothing they can give a cold. They can just handle a fever or something else like that, but the cold's got to take its time, they say. Well, now, that doesn't have to be. Can you imagine the early pioneers, the the Cro-Magnon men and so forth, who got a cold. I mean, they didn't have any clothes, winter and summer. And most of the time, they just went around naked. That's all they could do. And yet, they were healthy as a bear. They may have developed a little more skin, hair on their skin, but basically, that wasn't the cause. They had that inner healing attitude, that inner wholeness attitude, that they could do anything. It's just like these people that we told you about down at the Tierra del Sol, Tierra del Fuego, rather, down at the tip of South America. When the early pioneers came across there, they stopped there because their ship was getting ready to go around the bottom. And when they stopped, they saw these naked Indians in the middle of winter. Blizzards and storms, and they're just out there playing basketball and doing all sorts of stuff. And the mother and dad go to the beach and spear fish, and the kids play in the water, pushing the icebergs out of the way. They were really acclimated to that temperature, and we could really handle it. And then they would wear a skin robe, not to keep warm, but to carry things. You know, it would be like a garment to carry the fish that they caught and other things that they caught, sort of hanging over their shoulders. But I think that the body has more possibilities to heal itself and take care of itself than we give it credit for, because we say, oh, I'm cold, or we say, oh, I'm hot, or oh, I'm this, or oh, I'm that, instead of just saying, I feel great, and be immune to the temperature. Mm-hmm. Now, if you could walk around like this, with your arms away from your body about a foot, and never touch your body, you wouldn't realize that your body was cold. Because your body doesn't have that cold sensitiveness. It's just when you touch your body, touch yourself right now, and you feel cool. Mm-hmm. And you feel cool mainly because you're just a little different from the temperatures that are around you. But if you didn't touch yourself, you wouldn't know you were cool. You know? You just wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. And we tell ourselves that we're cold. We tell ourselves that we're hungry. We tell ourselves with a table full of food that we eat, my goodness, it's no wonder that we're all very, very healthy. And that is very, well, I am, okay. So, but these are things that we do to ourselves. The body has a tendency to heal itself and maintain itself at a very high level. And we have a ability to maintain the body at a very low level, because we tell it that it's not good. We tell it that it's not growing well. We tell it, it's just like in Little Shirley Temple the other night. She says, when I grow up, you know, and she held her hand up above her head. And we always are thinking of growing up instead of living in the now and enjoying the moment now. As you watch the film, did you enjoy each moment as it came along? Did you enjoy each little episode as it came along? Did you anticipate? Did you anticipate when he is going to ask her to marry him? When they're going to be the perfect couple? When they're going to do this? When they're going to do that? You know, you anticipated that. That was written into the film purposely. That was to get your anticipation. Because most of the time, people don't wait that long to ask those questions. And especially if the film is as short as it normally has to be, you got to move it along. You got to do these actions more quickly. Well, that's the same with your body. Your body has anticipation built into it by you. You say, well, it's going to be cold tonight. I'm going to get a cold. Well, if flu's coming around, I'm going to get the flu. Well, you know, problems are coming and I can smell it in the wind, you know, and you're going to get it. Instead of saying, hey, I can smell in the wind health, harmony, happiness, peace, joy, love, truth. And hey, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Hey, that's me, that's me, that's me. Hey, start putting these causes in motion for yourself and watch the magic happen. Watch the miracles happen. Watch your life change from being an ordinary person who experiences things that ordinary people experience to an extraordinary person who experiences only what extraordinary people experience. It's up to you. You can have it any way you like. And if you don't like it, then take it another way. Any way you like. There's nobody says you got to do it one way or the other. Except, hopefully, your own indwelling self. If you listen to your divine self, then you'll always be perfect, and you'll always be happy, and you'll always be healthy, and you'll always be doing the right thing at the right time, the right way, for the right purpose. And you'll like yourself in the process. Because life is wonderful. The body has a miraculous capacity to heal itself. And don't you ever forget it. When I make another angry, I have conquered him. When I make another angry, I have conquered him. When I make another angry, I have conquered him. Now this is what I do as your teacher. I see if I can irritate the living daylights out of you. I come up to you and make comments, and I tell stories about you, and I tell stories about other people, attempting to irritate you, attempting to shake you up. And that you should know I'm doing that is a fact, but that you're bothered by it is unfortunate. When you realize that I am doing what the rest of the world is doing to you, and learning how to control it when you're here, then when you go into the rest of the world, you will be untouched by it. This is the major thing, because people will come up to you and they will say, "Don't you realize that the poor Biafrans have nothing to eat, and we have to send them food, and you're wasting this food, and you're not doing these things properly, and we should do this, we should do that. Now, John, don't you realize that we should have a prayer meeting, and the prayer meeting should be for peace, and we should say there's peace on earth, you know, and we're going to do something about that peace on earth, because we're going to get rid of her, and get rid of him, and get rid of them, so that there'll be peace on earth, right? Isn't that right? That's what we should do. That's what we should do. We should have this go, go, go." That's getting you angry. That's called following somebody else's cause. And when you follow somebody else's cause, hopefully it's not your cause. When you follow somebody else's cause, you're a fool. Back in the early days, the pioneer days of the United States, the sheriff was a good guy, did a good job. But sometimes somebody would be terrible, and he would shoot somebody that was important, like maybe your daughter, you know, or maybe your son, or maybe the head of the family, or the wife. And so the guy would go to prison, he'd go to jail, that is, in the sheriff's jail. And then the people would stand outside, "We want him. We want to string him up. We're going to string him up. He's evil. He's bad. He's terrible." You see, they're trying to get you angry. So they're building up what's called a lynch mob attitude. And so all the people feel self-righteous about it. "Get that person out of here. That person is terrible. They did it terrible." They may not even have done it. He hasn't even had a trial yet. They haven't even found out if the sheriff just brought him in and accused him of that, or whether he really did it. Now, he could very well not have done it. In fact, many of them didn't, because the actual culprit got out of town quick. He wasn't going to hang around. And so then they string this guy up, the lynch mob anger, and he's dead. And then other people say, "Well, it didn't bring back your wife, but at least he got some revenge." And then later on, they find out that he wasn't the guy who did it. And what an ugly revenge, you know, how it disturbs them. But you see, when I make another angry, I've conquered him. So if the guy who did this terrible thing got everybody, you know, angered up about this other guy who's in jail that they thought did it, and then they kill that guy, then the heat is off of him. He has conquered them. He's controlled them. And this is what we do. It's a lynch mob attitude. When we get angry about anything, no matter what the thing is, if we get angry about it, we are useless. We have given away control of ourselves. We've given away control of our attitude. We've given away control of our ability to do anything worthwhile, anything good. Now, teachers usually have a class of some 30 children. And if the teachers were to get angry at those 30 children, and I'm sure they do lots of things that would make a normal person angry, the teacher would be angry most of the time. You got 30 little rascals there with all sorts of cute little tricks that they're pulling, you know, and things that they do at home and things that they do elsewhere, and they get away with stuff, so they're going to try it on the teacher. Well, the teacher, if she's wise, she looks at the kids and says, I know what you're after. I know what you're doing. I've been there too. I did that. But we're not going to do that here in this class. Now, let's just get that aside. Not, you stupid little kids, you terrible children, you're lousy, lousy, lousy. A lot of teachers, they lose their cool, and they do something with them. And of course, the minute they do, the kids have won. They got the teacher angry, and so then the teacher sends them home. That's what they wanted to do. They didn't want to sit in school. They didn't really like her class in the first place. And so she just falls into their trap. But if every teacher fell into the trap of the children, they wouldn't be teachers very long. So they learn to be mellow, and they learn to listen to the children, and they learn to recognize what the children are trying to pull. These are all games. Children are full of imagination. They're full of the Dickens, always trying to upgrade the other guy. Let's see if we can throw a spitball, you know. And you know what a spitball is, don't you? Mm-hmm. You take a piece of paper and you spit in it, and you roll the spit up in the paper, and then you throw it, you know. But it makes it soggy. And then when it hits somebody, or it hits the blackboard, it'll stay up on the blackboard. I mean, oh, I've seen some gigantic ones sometimes. Everybody contributes, you know, and they throw it up there. But they're trying to make the teacher upset. They're trying to make the teacher angry. And you know what happens when they do that? If the teacher is cool, the teacher will say, all right, since you want to wash the board, let's all come up here and wash the blackboard. And, you know, you kids are the most wonderful kids in the world. I have more fun with you. You think that you can outfox me, but I've been there. I've had more little foxes than you'll ever think about, and I love them. So bring on all your guns. Bring on all your ideas. Bring on all your imagination, and we'll have fun. And it's no fun to play the game when everybody knows what you're doing. And so then they stop being a bunch of little mixers, you know, and they're being that. That's a cool teacher we got, you know. She knows what we're doing, you know. She's got, and she doesn't get angry at us. Now, what was the thing that delighted you the most in Sound of Music when Julie Andrews went into this house of these children, and the children put something in her pocket, and you know. The kids loved it. Oh, they thought, have we got a live one here? And then when they put this, seed for cone, pine cone on her chair, and she sat on it, whoop, you know, and he says, do you always do that before you sit down? And she looked down, and she said, yes. Hey, cool. She owned the situation. She did not let herself get angry at these little nonsensical kids having a ball. And what happened? They ended up loving her. Of course, she wrote the script and stuff like that, but we always do. We always do. You see, when I make another angry, I've conquered him. The kids know that. When they make their teacher angry, they've conquered the teacher. When they make their mother and father angry, they've conquered them. But they've also put a lot of unhappiness around them. And that is not as much fun as happiness. Okay, we're going to go to the show. But I'm not happy about this. Now, get in the car and shut up. There's going to be no popcorn and no ice cream in the show. Now, sit down and shut up. If you make any noise in the show, I'm going to take you out and tan your hide. You know, that's no fun. Already, you're cowed. But you're possessed. So when your dad does such a thing like that, say, Dad, did you ever do anything silly when you were a kid? You say, no. Well, gosh, I thought that you were a normal kid too. Dad, we're sorry. Will you forgive us? Okay. You know. Yeah. All you have to do is just have that little gentleness, that little love, and all the big problems of the world dissolve. All the big problems of the world dissolve. That's what's called an ambassador at work. That's what's called a person who cares. To be an ambassador is a pain in the neck, because you have to take a lot of nonsense overlook a lot of nonsense because of what alone? You see the big picture. And because you see the big picture, this is what we want to accomplish. Don't pay attention to these little irritations down here. Just let them fluff away. They could make an international incident in many cases, but they don't let them. They let them fluff away. When I make another angry, I've conquered him. And when another makes you angry, they've conquered you. Don't let it happen. Be master of yourself. And give him a smile. Say, I'm sorry, even though it's not your fault. And there's nothing to be angry about. I love how much I care influences others much more than how much I know. How much I care influences others much more than how much I know. How much I care influences others more than how much I know. We think that how much we know is so important. We think that how much we know is the guiding factor that represents what other people think about us. And we think that that's so vital. We think that we're knowledgeable when we know how to do things. But what really influences other people, and what really influences us, is how much we care. When the little boy comes screaming, I hate you, mother, how much does she care? Now, she knows that the boy doesn't really mean it. But she could be emotionally distraught and care a lot and say, you stupid little boy. But immediately she says, now, what seems to be the problem? That's caring. And how much she cares is so much better than how much she knows. Because she might know the problem. She might know all the world is on his shoulders. She might know that he has big, big worries. But when she shows that she really cares, all the worries fall away. All of the problems and things that are difficult to handle fall away. This is for us too. If we would pay attention to how much we really care about people, then we would really have a wonderful situation. But unfortunately, that's not the way we're built. We're built to do one thing, and that is to be selfish, to only think about ourselves. And that's the way it's best to do it. Always only think about yourself. Don't care about anybody else. Don't care about anything else in the world. Don't care about anything outside yourself. Just who you are and your personal creation. Now, we come to the point. What is our personal creation? We got the ourself okay. We understand that. And we should like that, even though there we have a hard time. But what's our personal creation? Is our personal creation the people down the block who have problems? Is our personal creation somebody who is having difficulty getting along in life? Is our personal creation the school and the problems that they're having in teaching children? Is our personal creation that the teachers in school are inadequate, that the teaching in school is inadequate? Well, if that's our personal creation, then we better do something about our personal creation. Could we say all the teachers in all the schools are dedicated people, caring about the children, caring about their education, wanting each individual child to be his highest and best? If we were to put that in our consciousness, that would be the story that we would have. Unfortunately, we think, well, we cannot make a step. We cannot touch the world. We cannot affect the world. We can only affect our own little circle. We think that we put our little stone in the water and it just makes our own little set of circles. But when we throw that stone in the water, what happens? The circle grows and grows and grows infinitesimally, but magnificently it grows ad infinitum. Even though we cannot see how far it's growing because the wake of each circle becomes less and less, it grows and grows and grows. Now, this is how our action is upon the world. It becomes invisible after a while. But we speak our word and we say every teacher in every school is excellent. Every teacher in every school meets the needs of each individual child that that teacher works with, guiding them to their highest and best. Now, why should I be concerned about that? Why should I be concerned about that? Because if it comes to my mind at all, then I should be the master of my thought. If it comes to my mind at all, I should be the one who determines the outcome of any thought I have in my mind. My thought is, we're having a party. What are we going to eat? And I think about that. And I think, well, we're going to have this and that and the other thing. And then we go and have this, that, and the other thing. Now, did I put the thought in motion that brought it about? Yeah. Now, if I put the thought in motion, oh, we're going to have a party, and oh, are we going to have enough to eat? Will there be enough food to go around? Will I plan on enough people? Will I know how many are going to be there? Oh, dear, oh, dear. And what's going to happen? We're going to run short of food. And we're going to have a lot of people who are going to be unhappy because they didn't get something to eat. Not that they needed something to eat, but that's the party is all about. You don't want to go to an empty tray, an empty table, serving table for buffet. When you're at a party, you want it to be full from the beginning to the end. When the night is over, the table is still full. The bishop's wife. Remember the old man? His bottle of wine was always full. Well, that's not a joke. That's not a joke. You go to any party where the people are really generous, loving people. They're not afraid to put on a spread. They don't put on lavish spread. They just put on a good spread. And that spread is on there until the last person leaves. There's plenty on the table. There's plenty. And then when it comes time to clean it up, no problem. It all fits easily in the refrigerator. Why could so much fit in the refrigerator? Because it's like the bishop's wife's bottle, you know. Remember? It's always full. That's all our consciousness. That's all our thinking. When we care, it's not how much we know. It's that we care so deeply and so wonderfully about our creation. Now, Andrine is the care of Anita here. She thinks he's just a terrific boy. He's a beautiful boy doing everything great. Now, is he? Is he always perfect? Is he always, as far as Anita's concerned? Anita does not think of him doing anything but being a super guy. And in Anita's world, he's super. And then Anita says to her sister, well, how is my super nephew? You know. And she says, what? Oh, yeah, sure. Immediately she starts getting her mind around. Now, if Anita would have her sister in her mind all the time as seeing Andrine perfect and doing everything wonderful all the time, so it would be. Now, that's a small task. That's your creation. You created your sister in your world. You created the boy in your world. You created your mom. You created these people in your world. And you created us in your world. Are we living up to your expectations? If not, you have lowered your expectations. So raise your expectations. See us always being our finest and our best. And it's fantastic. And when you see us being our finest and our best, what happens? That's what we are. Can you handle something like that? Can you live with something like that? Can you take responsibility for your thought? Can you take responsibility for everything you want to do? Now, John, Anita, Ellen, and I had a nice long talk down there. They brought up some questions, and we talked about them, and we answered them. And John was saying about his spiritual path. Being himself and having fun, he wanted to walk his spiritual path and know that he's walking it. But he knows that there's a few little areas he wants to polish and bless. Now, what should John say? Should he say, I have a few little areas I want to polish and bless? Or does he say, naming those areas, they are polished and they are blessed. They exist perfect, magnificent. I am 100% in tune with my divine self. I am 100% aware of who I am. I am a happy guy. I'm fulfilled in every way. I'm doing everything right in my life. Wherever I go, I am fulfilled in everything I do and say and am with anybody. And I like myself. Now, you say, well, John's got a few problems. I don't know why he can say he can like himself. Who's got the problem? The person who says John has a problem. John doesn't. The little boy who has problems, but he likes himself, he comes in the house, son, you got problems. We got to talk about this. Well, Mom, you're the one who's got the problem. I don't. Son, don't be nonsensical now. Yeah. Well, it's true, isn't it? It's the mamas that's got the problem. So when the mama starts saying, son, you are always orderly, you are always gentle, you are always caring, you are a fabulous boy, I'm so proud of you. Once, then let it go. Day later, son, I'm so proud of the way you always put your things away. Every time she talks to that kid, she says something beautiful about him. What's going to happen to the kid? He'll be the outpicturing of what she puts into motion for him. She's the creator. She doesn't have to create him on the illusion that might appear, but she creates him on the reality of her heart, the reality of her world, because she's the master. Now, we can all do that. And how much I care influences others more than how much I know. Remember that. You put the cause in motion for whatever experience you want. Whatever you look out upon the world and you think needs a little bit of loving, put the love in there. See it done in its perfect, harmonious way, starting with yourself. That's all. Starting with yourself. And if you do, you got it made, baby. Like acid, hatred destroys the vessel which holds it. Like acid, hatred destroys the vessel which holds it. I was watching Ingeborg water my plants, and we have these beautiful stainless steel cups that cost much more than glass and so forth, and they're very precious, and they're to be used for special purposes. And she was using that to water the plants, taking the plant, what he calls fertilizer, mixed up with the water to water the plants. And that has a tendency to destroy the cup. And we don't want to do that. But it's just like, it's an acid. And acid, like hatred, destroys the vessel which holds it. Whenever a person is hateful, they usually have a scowling disposition. They usually have an unsmiling face. They're usually looking for problems in the world rather than solutions. So, whenever I see a scowling individual and they come into my world more than just passing by, I say to them, you know, you must have had a very wonderful childhood. And they say, why is that? Well, because you had a lot of smiles then, didn't you? Yeah, I did. Well, what happened that you don't smile so much anymore? Well, I got these problems, and these people took advantage of me, and these people took advantage of me. Wasn't it wonderful to be so capable of being taken advantage of? I mean, you know, it takes a special person to do that. A person is very loving and trusting and reaching out to people, and they take advantage. But sometimes that's called naivete, you know, and we have to take responsibility for ourselves. Now, are you still having people take advantage of you? Yeah, every time they see me, they take advantage of me. Well, then maybe it's time to change the image. Now, little children sometimes have people come and take advantage of them. Now, why do they have people who are taking advantage of them? Because they're looking for love. They want to be loved from however or whoever they can get love from. Now, apparently, you're looking for love from whomever you can get love from. And you're hoping upon hope that if you trust people, they'll love you and they'll do nice things for you. You know, the art of this whole business of living is from another point of view. It's from your point of view, where you give of yourself first, before anybody else even thinks of giving. You give. You lovingly give. You lovingly work with people. And you set the parameters too right away. You say, hey, I'm going to take you out for a ride in my boat. But when I take you out for a ride in my boat, I expect you to polish down the boat when we're done, you to sweep down the inside of the boat so that all the fish scales are cleaned up and stuff like that, and you to polish the windshield, and you to do whatever, you know, maybe fill it with the gas that's on the dock. We can make sure they've got gas for the next time we take the Chris-Craft out. And if anybody doesn't want to do their part, that's fine. But they're not going to be invited again. Because it's my boat, and I enjoy having you, but I want you all each to have an opportunity to have the fun of taking care of the boat. Because just like if you own the boat yourself, you take care of it. So I'm going to give you the chance. Now, a person who ends up with anger is a person who doesn't set the rules in the beginning. And who, if people don't follow the rules, oh, that's so terrible. Oh, they took advantage of me. They didn't take advantage of you. You let them. You knew they were that kind of person. You knew that they were a person who takes advantage of you when you started. So why did you invite them along? Why don't you invite people along who you enjoy being with? Well, they said they wanted to come. That's no reason to come. If people want to come just because they want to come, lots of people want to be in our world. And if we accept them, then we have to accept the personality that they are. Or we create them new. Now, if that person would come into your world and he always took advantage of you, what's he going to do the next time he comes into your world? He's going to take advantage of you. Unless you put a new cause in motion. Now, what's a new cause? The new cause is that person is harmonious, wonderful, happy, harmonious, a great person. We have a good time together, and he just thinks cleaning up the boat is the most fun thing in the world. Just say those things. In fact, you can say those things to everybody who comes on. You're the most wonderful person in the world. You just enjoy cleaning up the boat afterwards, and you just had the greatest time on the boat. We do lots of good things, and you know that you want to be welcome another time because we do have fun together. Well, I'm bringing the beer. I don't have to clean the boat. Everybody cleans the boat. If you bring the beer, that's just fine, but everybody cleans the boat. Well, I'm bringing the hamburgers. I don't have to clean the boat. Everybody cleans the boat. Just because you're bringing the hamburgers, it doesn't mean anything. Everybody cleans the boat. Well, I'm going to clean the fish after we catch them. Well, that's fine. Everybody cleans the boat. That's just part of the game. Now, if you don't want to come along, we'll all do your job. We'll all do your job of bringing the hamburgers or bringing the beer or cleaning the fish or whatever it is. We'll all do your job. It doesn't really matter. But we all clean the boat. We all clean the boat. And so, when people are so knowledgeable about what your wishes are, they'll come along with it. Now, rather than getting angry at someone who doesn't cooperate, don't invite them again. That's all. Just say, hey, glad you enjoyed the boat. I won't see you again. What do you mean you won't see me again? Well, everyone who rides in my boat helps to clean the boat up. Well, that's stupid. I am the big man. You know, you guys are the little people. Well, that's just fine, but we don't need any big people around here, or little people. We're all just people, and we like each other, we respect each other. But, I am not going to have an ulcer because of you. I'm not going to have an angry stomach because of you. No way, you don't touch me. If you don't want to do your part with us, that's okay. Hey, I still love you. Just because you're not part of our boats team anymore, I still love you. But I want to go out the boat. If you want to go out on the boat, stop acting like a little child. In fact, little children love to help. Little children enjoy cleaning up the boat afterwards. They enjoy doing these things. But. Well, Herb, you certainly spent a long time on that boat. But it's a good illustration. It's a good illustration. Don't let anyone get you angry. You're getting yourself angry, of course. But don't let anyone spearhead that's encouraged in you. You just say, hey, I like me. I'm too happy a guy to be unhappy with anybody. I think that my world is wonderful and I really enjoy me. I really like me. I really like my world. And I do my part. And there's nothing, no job I wouldn't do. Sure, I own the boat, but I don't mind cleaning it. I love it. I own the boat. I don't mind paying for the gas. I love it. I own the boat. I don't mind buying the beer for my friends. I love it. I own the boat. I don't mind buying the hamburgers. I love it. I just love my boat. And I love everybody who comes with me. And you know, everybody wants to do their part. In fact, they even say, now Herb, you stand back. We're going to clean this boat. And when we're done cleaning this boat, you're going to say, wow, I'm going to invite those guys along next time. You know, and you're right. You're right. And if they didn't do it, it wouldn't disturb me at all. I sold real estate in Corona Del Mar for years, and very successfully and happily. And one of my clients, Carl Quant, had a couple hundred thousand acres of cotton land up in Bakersfield, and out in San Jacinto, he owned a couple thousand acres, gave the center of it to the Mount San Jacinto Junior College and developed the area around it. And that's where Ray lives now. So he came to me to buy some property. And I sold him property, and we worked together like a hand in glove in Corona del Mar. And then he says, "Herb, I'm not going to be down using my house. It's right on the beach. Use it anytime you want. My boats, here's the keys, and here's the this. Just use it and enjoy." He said, "It's all yours, Herb. Just take good care of it and enjoy." And so I did. And I would take the Unity minister with me, and we'd go out there boating, and I'd take other friends along. We'd go out there, we'd use this Chris craft and run all over the ocean, just having the great old time. Any repairs that need to be done, just have it done and send the bill to him. You know, it was just a great way to fly. Who needed to own it when you could have that, you know? But people I took with me oftentimes didn't like to clean the boat because they were my clients. They thought I should do it for them. And I said, "Now, just a minute. There's no client relationship here. You are a friend. To tell you the truth, it's your mother that's a client, not you." And he was a grown man, and his mother owned all the properties that I was handling. But he didn't work for her. He just had his own job and his own family. But he went out in the boat because she didn't want to go. And so he didn't want to clean the boat. I said, "Come on now, Bob, you clean the boat." I said, "You don't clean the boat, I don't invite you again." He says, "Ah, sure you will. You want my mother's business." I said, "Hey, this boat's nothing to do with your mother's business. I just happen to be working with you guys and being friends with you guys and knowing you more than I do some other people, and so I invited you along." I said, "I got lots of other people I could invite. Lots of other people. But right now, I just stay with the people I'm working with in my business, you know." He said, "Well, I'm Bob." I said, "Bob, I like you, but I'm not going to be used by you. I invite you as my guest, but as a working guest. And if you don't want to come, don't come." So we caught a whole lot of barracuda, and we caught a bunch of other fish, and slimy scales all over the boat. You know how that is. They're sliding all around down there. And so we came to shore, and he took his fish, and he jumped out of the boat, ran up to his car, and went home. And so I cleaned the boat. It was mostly his fish. He was spending all the time fishing. I was just spending time talking, laying in the sun, enjoying. So next day when I was by his house to talk to his mother, she said, "Well, Bob tells me you had a wonderful time in the boat and you caught all these fish." And I said, "Yeah, that's the last time he's coming along too." "What do you mean?" And I said, "I asked him to help clean up the boat afterwards, and he just jumped in the into this car and took off and didn't offer to help anything." I said, "I'm not a slave for somebody." I said, "Now, Mrs. McCutcheon, I don't know if you're a slave, but you certainly raised a rather unkind son, an inconsiderate son." She says, "Yes, he's been that way all his life, and I can't change him." And I said, "Well, the way to change it is to take away some of his privileges. Stop letting him use your apartments down here that you have at the beach. Let him pay for it. Because you could earn money. I could fill those apartments without he and his family always being down here. I mean, you're spending some $4,000 a month that you could be earning on these apartments down here at the beach. And you just get $4,000. Oh, I'd never thought of that." I said, "And more. The utilities. And more. The wear and tear. And more, you know." And I said, "He's not a bad boy. It's just that you have not raised him to be considerate. And he's not going to be inconsiderate with me." And I said, "If I lose your business because I talked to you like this," I said, "then that's the way it is." She said, "Oh, you don't lose my business." She says, "I've been there, done that, trying to figure out how to handle it." And I said, "Well, just take a few suggestions. But they have to come from you. If you say they come from me, they're meaningless. Not that I'm not willing to stand up upon, but they're meaningless unless they come from you. Because you are the one who is now standing up to your son and saying, 'Look, son, you're 42 years old, and you have four children and a wife and a job up in Redlands or something like there. And we go down to the beach, and you use up an apartment house that could bring in this many $1,000s every month during the summertime when we rent the apartment to the summer goers for something like $1,800 a week, you know. Woo. But they want to go to the beach, and they're nice, they're furnished, and they're everything. And he and his family use it. And she says, "Boy, have you opened my eyes, Herb." And I said, "Well, don't close your heart when I open your eyes, because he's still your son and you still love him very much. Just put your foot down and say, 'I'm sorry, boy, pay or don't go.'" And he'll say, "Well, why are you doing this?" "Because I have asked you to rake the lawn here, to have your children rake the lawn, and they didn't have time. I've asked you to do this, and they didn't have time. I've asked you to do that." You see, she's not going to let anger get into her tummy either. And she was a really grand old lady. She was in her 80s, and I was handling all of her property for her. And she had just been fed up with her son and his attitude. She had two other sons and a daughter, too. And each one was equally as inconsiderate. But here, in her 80s, she started doing this, and it didn't take long. I think it was about 2 months. And I saw her son's children out there. She could afford to have the yard done by gardeners and all that sort of stuff, but she wanted her grandchildren to have the opportunity to do the work. And pretty soon they were doing it. And she said, "You know, Herb, I've never felt better in my life since I took charge." She said, "Thank you very much." I said, "Don't thank me. I thought you were going to fire me because I told you what I did with your son." Oh, that was the biggest blessing that could ever happen to me. You see, sometimes we have to stand up. We don't always have the winning end. Sometimes we have to get another client. But that's okay. Just like with Mr. Gill, remember? Gill Electric. He's a multi-billionaire. He sold his battery company to Teledyne. And he was just money, money, money. Well, he, in Redlands, another one from Redlands. And he raised his daughter by himself. And he was in his 80s. And his daughter's husband was an insurance man with, you're in good hand, Allstate, you know, Allstate Insurance. And he was doing all right, but not good, you know, just all right. And they lived in a modest house. And I said to Mr. Gill, I said, "Mr. Gill," not to his face, I wrote him a letter. I said, "Mr. Gill," I said, "you're 80, soon you're going to be somewhere else, and your daughter is going to inherit all your money, and she hasn't the vaguest idea how to handle it. You haven't taught her anything, how to handle money, how to make it work, how to make it grow, how not to be taken when people come and give you a crying story to say that they need help, you know. You can't help the whole world, you just do well and be a blessing by your existence." And I went on in the letter, and I said, "It's a good idea for you to teach your daughter and her husband, because he is the one who's going to be doing a lot of things to him, and the kids." She had two girls. "How to handle money." And I went to his office many times. And then one day, about 3 weeks later, I went to his office. I'd seen my letter on his desk each day. And I saw them painting a sign on the door that said his son-in-law's name as vice president. And then his daughter's name on another door as financial advisor. And I was so happy. He never told me thank you. He never said, "Herb, I really appreciate what you've done for me." But he just was great. Amen.